We're joined by Carol Muffett, who is the president of the Center for International Environmental Law. And they were the lead group among 500 who recently put out a letter and a newspaper ad calling on the United States and Canada to reject carbon capture and storage as a false solution to climate crisis. So Carol, maybe you just start off with a brief overview. What is the Center of International Environmental Law, and what prompted your group to put out this letter and I guess report on carbon capture and storage?
Thanks. The Center for International Environmental Law, or CL, is a nonprofit organization that uses the power of law to protect the environment, promote human rights, and ensure a just and sustainable society. We've been around for more than 30 years.
And so what are some of the problems with, carbon capture? And I know, unfortunately, that this is something that many politicians have been very heavily promoting. And, the deal that was cut on energy at the end of last year in Congress included a lot of money for carbon capture and storage. And it seems to be something that the mainstream Democrats are heavily promoting.
Yeah. And, the problems with carbon capture and storage are many, but they can be distilled into a few simple facts. Carbon capture and storage doesn't work. It is incredibly expensive. It doesn't actually remove carbon from the atmosphere, and it's dangerous. And that last point is really widely disregarded in the discussions of carbon capture and storage. And it's notable that it poses particular risks for the same environmental justice communities that have been targeted for dirty industries for decades.
Can you maybe explain a little bit, what do they mean by, carbon, capture and storage?
The idea behind carbon capture and storage is that rather than address climate change with solutions that work, like expanding renewable energy and accelerating electric vehicles, that we will address climate change by continuing to burn oil, gas, and coal, the fossil fuels that drive the climate crisis, and that we will, that industries will simply capture the carbon that is emitted, capture the CO2 that's emitted at the end of those at the end of those pipes. Capture the carbon coming out of the smokestacks at these facilities, separate it from all the other waste gases, condense it under massive pressures, and then pipe it tens to hundreds to up to 1,000 or more miles to be injected into the ground in the argument that it can be permanently stored. And the problems with this are many. The first and most fundamental problem is it is so massively energy intensive to run this equipment that the coal industry doesn't want to do it. It's not actually economically feasible to do it with gas. It requires you to burn more coal or oil or gas to get the same energy, which means you get more of all the other pollutants that come with those sources. And then once you pressurize that CO2 and put it in a pipeline, it becomes a very hazardous substance. And those, it's being proposed to build 25,000 to 65,000 miles of these pipelines and run them through communities across the United States with a heavy focus on communities in southern Louisiana and the Gulf Coast of Texas. But really, you see pipeline proposals for numerous other places from the Midwest to California's Central Valley and beyond. And these pipelines are potentially profoundly dangerous. One of the other really fundamental things to recognize about carbon capture and storage is that because the process is so expensive, the only, and there's very little demand for CO2, there's very little market for it. Most carbon capture and storage proposals are supported by injecting the CO2 into the ground just to produce more oil, 80% of captured CO2 is used just to produce more oil, which will then be burned to release more carbon into the atmosphere.
Now, some, people make the point that, right now, I'm very active with 350.org. The goal is to keep the, amount of greenhouse carbon emissions in the atmosphere below 350 parts, I believe, per million. And we're, well above 400, 415, 420. And they say, even if we stop burning fossil fuels, we have to, remove the existing carbon to get us back to 350. So how does one respond to that? And is there a difference, say, between, carbon removal versus carbon capture and storage?
That's a really fundamental point. And because these terms are often used interchangeably and they're not, carbon capture and storage by itself does nothing to remove carbon from the atmosphere. And it, even in the best of circumstances, it would only, be carbon neutral. And that, in fact, never happens. It always ends up releasing carbon to the atmosphere. Direct air capture and other forms of purported carbon dioxide removal say that they're going to remove carbon from the atmosphere, but most of them, including direct air capture, actually rely on CCS to work. And I think the direct air capture is a case in point in this. With direct air capture, it is massively energy intensive because you're pulling carbon not out of a smoke stream, out of a waste stream, but out of the general atmosphere where there is, it's one molecule out of every 10 million is carbon dioxide. And so you have to move massive quantities of air to capture that carbon. It's profoundly energy intensive, which means most direct air capture projects are actually powered by fossil fuels, with a very few exceptions. And most of the carbon being captured in existing or proposed direct air capture program projects is being used either to produce more oil, again, to be burned, or simply to produce diesel fuel and jet fuel that themselves will be burned. And so that's not carbon negative either.
So what should, Congress and the world be doing at this point, rather than investing in carbon capture and storage?
We have less than 10 years now to cut global emissions in half and only a few decades to eliminate them entirely. But the truth is, we know how to do that. We have technologies that work, and those technologies are already dramatically cheaper than using energy with carbon capture and storage. In fact, those technologies are cheaper than just continuing to build or use existing coal and gas-fired power plants. So the solution for Congress and others is to take those billions of dollars that they want to sink into supporting a dying fossil fuel industry and invest them instead in renewable energies, in building sustainable communities, in building more energy efficient cities. Those are the solutions that are going to create jobs, they're going to create opportunities, and actually going to create a livable planet on the time frame that we need to do it.
So we have a little bit over a minute left. So two-part question, are there some natural ways to sequester carbon that, should be looked at? And if people want to, support this particular call or find out more information about carbon capture and storage, what's your website? Where's a copy of the letter?
Absolutely. So first, there are natural solutions. Protecting existing forests, helping restore degraded forests, restoring degraded agricultural lands, protecting seabeds and coastal mangroves, all of these things can capture carbon. Their capacity is not huge, but it's not insignificant either. And so they can be an important part of the solution. If you want to find out more, you can visit our website at www.cl.org, carbon capture.
Well, thank you very much. You've been talking with Carol Muffett, President and CEO of the Center of International Environmental Law. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.